Welcome back to The Wild Bunch. It's season two, and we're here with a brand new episode. Before we start, let me go ahead and remind you who we are. I am
Gregory Valdez, and I am
Joseph Hernandez.
Oh, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's 2019.
You like that little thing?
I did like it. Yeah, the switch around. Around is good.
So, how has your week been?
My week has been good. Houston is treating me well. First week here, living with Martha and Adrian. For those of you who don't know, those are Greg's parents.
Yeah, we touched on in the last episode how Joe is going to be staying with them for the next few months. And I'm back and forth between Houston and San Antonio. I'm not always there. So it's always interesting to catch up with them and see what they've been up to.
We had a nice dinner the other night. Me, your mom, and your dad talked mostly about you. Bad stuff, good stuff, that kind of thing, personal things.
As an only child, that's how I always expect it to be.
Really? they always have a brother now.
I was explaining to my boyfriend the other day that it doesn't matter. For them, what they would prefer is me there and them always complaining about me all the time rather than only see me once every 6 months.
That's true.
And everything be hunky-dory.
Well, I'm a good sounding board now, so they can complain about you to me.
Yeah.
So let's get into this. This episode is about mental health. What are we going to be talking about today, Greg?
Mental health and mindfulness. What it really means to be more mentally aware of what you're doing, working on that consistency and stability in your mental health. What is mindfulness? How does awareness play into that? And how it's more than just your mind, but also your physicality that adds and brings fruitfulness out of what you're paying attention to when it comes to your mental health.
I love it. This is honestly one of my favorite things to talk about. And we have a special guest today, Brad Drew. Brad, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here with you, Greg, Joe, or Greg and Joe. I looked at the wrong people. I got confused by your introduction.
We did the switch around. I'm sure others will be confused as well.
I know. That's going to cause a wrinkle in the time, space-time continuum there, I imagine. No, mindfulness is something that we don't pay nearly enough attention to. And it defines who we are and how we interact with the world. There are a lot of different ways. There are countless ways that we can identify the moments that we need to improve that attention that we pay to the living of our lives. And as we do that, we gain a fuller appreciation of who we really are and how our lives can, in fact, materially and quite substantially influence the world and how things happen in it. So, yeah. That's it. It's been great, folks. Talk to you next week.
I was going to go ahead and add, Brad is the founder of the 200 Project. It's something I've gone to dip my fingers into and my toes into along the past few months, helping out with on different levels, more associated with my expertise or so-called expertise in marketing and social media and the like. We work together at an ad agency here in Houston. That's how we know each other.
We did.
It was like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was about that long ago. It's I don't trust spans of time anymore. My concept of is not as reliable as perhaps once it was. But
we did break the continuum, so we don't have to worry about time at all.
Yeah, we're actually in a bubble of timelessness.
But back to the 200 Project.
You and every cosmetics counter from here to New York.
You have to remember that if I ever start selling makeup.
Tell our listeners, Brad, about the 200 Project. So what did you find here with this?
Well, we were just, in fact, before we came in here to sit down to record, our host out there was, he and I were talking about the very thing. A few years ago, I began investigating within my own mind, the nature of how we interact with the world.
Right.
You know, it's what does it mean to be alive? I mean, we hear that question all the time in a religious context. You know, we can talk about the life and what might happen after life or what happened perhaps before life, that kind of thing. But what happens right here? You know, where is it where the rubber meets the road? And I did an awful lot of reading about that topic and about a lot of ancillary topics that bear on it that really have to do with the present moment, the living of life, and that's how the 200 Project was created. I created it as a network, kind of a clearinghouse for information that bears on that question. Because we, as we go through life, my feeling about it is, and all the evidence that I collect as I go forward seems to just be so boring that it reinforces it at every turn, is that we spend an awful lot of our life just checked out away from the present moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're thinking about what's going to happen, or we're thinking about what has happened, and we're kind of in this flux between the two instead of just being here now. A little bit of a Eckhart Tolle or Eckhart Tolle, depending on how I've heard people say it both ways.
I say Tolle just to make sure.
Yeah.
I say both.
Tolle, yeah, because I've heard it both. Mm-hmm. I never know which one it is, but you know, he had that book.
He probably doesn't know either by now. You know, it's like I've heard it mispronounced so many times, I'm confused. I have to call home and ask mom and dad. Yeah. But yeah, one of the things I created it just as it came up just as a thought, but it became sort of the tagline for the 200 Project, and that is as we change ourselves, we change the world. If we enter into the present moment and consciously force ourselves into the present moment in the living of our lives, can you imagine what the world would actually be like when you're walking down the street, you know, going to Starbucks and everybody's actually there?
I would hope that maybe they wouldn't be there, actually.
I thought you were going to tell me you weren't paying attention. I was going to get you.
Oh, my goodness. I was hearing that. It reminds me of this concept now of being woke, change ourselves to change the world. Joe and I talk about it a lot. It's the idea of, okay, if we could all just be woke, whatever that means,
right,
and perhaps be beacons of that change throughout our daily lives, then maybe that's the way we change the world.
Have you heard this term, Brad, be woke or I'm woke?
Let me tell you something. I have heard it so much that it makes my stomach turn over a little bit when I hear you use it, but I'm okay with that, Greg. You and I are friends and we go way back, so I'm going to use one of your friend coupons for using this today.
I'm going to use another one. Go hashtag.
I get what you're getting at, because it's become this like very hip, young kind of, you know, like people say it's lit, like one of those kind of like idioms that almost makes no sense, but I do like the concept behind being woke and
being aware,
being present in the moment, being conscious and actually questioning things as opposed to taking it for face value.
Yeah. In my defense, Your Honor, in this court of linguistics as we've unwittingly entered, I would say that the only problem that I have with the term is that it has commodified something that shouldn't be commodified. It's taken and made it into an overusable thing.
Right.
You know, it doesn't refer to the actual being in that way. You know, it refers to self-referential kind of a thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Too commercialized.
That's it. By saying that I'm woke, I can be just as unconscious as I want to be.
Oh, exactly. And many are. Many are.
That's right. What I wanted to touch on before we totally banish the use of that word for this episode. It's mental masturbation, which I can say that I am this, and I think that in saying that I'm becoming it, however, you're not putting any practice into the act. You're not actually getting anywhere behind saying that you are woke.
Well, there's a good point to there. I think that and that comes around full circle to the idea of being in the present moment. To live your life fully, to be engaged with the present moment in that way involves risk. And I think it's that risk that we shrink from when we abdicate the present moment. We put these moderators, mediators in there between us and the actual risky edge, that sharp edge that might cut us and make us feel less about something about ourselves, less than, you know? And we don't like taking those risks. We're risk-averse folks.
What are these risks?
That's a great question. People like their comfort zones. You know, no one wants to be put on the spot. No one wants to be vulnerable. Vulnerability is probably the biggest risk that I see people trying to shy away from. You know, to be able to say, I am this, or I did this, I made this mistake, I fudged up here. That's a risk. because you don't know how that other person or that audience is going to take it. Half the time, though, it's funny, it's not a risk at all. Usually when you're vulnerable with someone, I've found, is they accept you more.
That's, I feel like that's approaching authenticity in the most real way that you can. How do you say real when you're talking about authenticity? People want to use words to describe themselves.
Right.
But they're not actually doing it. I think authentic is one of those words. But through what you've just shared, that is how you reach authenticity, in my opinion, a part of it.
I do think that, though, I mean, we shouldn't discount the whole I am this, I am that, because I believe that that's almost step one when it comes to mental health and mental practice. You know, you are what you think of, basically. If you go in every day and you say, well, I'm a piece of shit, I'm not that smart, I'm a loser, you're going to become that. You're going to say it so many times that you're going to believe that. But if you give yourself some positive affirmations and then do the practices that can reinforce those things, it can help you develop as a person.
It's something I was going to say quickly earlier. When you talk about something like being woke, there's all the negatives that come along with not actually practicing what would make you woke.
Right.
But at the same time, the fact that there's this movement for wanting to be something other than what we were,
it's better than having nothing at all.
I think so.
I agree.
Okay, so what are some actual practices then? So we talked a lot about being woke in theory, or being, you know, aware of your mental.
You're just bound and determined to use the hell out of that word now, aren't you?
I think that was the last one.
Yeah, you weren't going to use it at all until I drew down on you. It's like, all right, here we go, Brad. Yeah.
Our audience knows what woke is. At least you should be if you guys have been listening.
Yeah.
So what are some actual practices that we can...
Well, one thing that I would like to, before we get sailing on the water, let's have a look at a star to set sail by here, to navigate by. Approaching that question as to what are the actual hallmarks of this state, right? Of this living of our life rather than being somewhere else. If you, in a lot of the reading that you can do, particularly about, and I don't want to get into the Eastern religion thing and all of that kind of stuff, but there are some really, really fundamental ideas that are fundamental to essential to living a human life there, you know. And one of them is, particularly in Buddhism, they talk about seeing things as they really are. Seeing things as they really are. And that, if you examine that and if you contemplate that statement or that challenge, what you're really saying is to live your life in the real, right? So as we are applying the waters of this, okay, what is this? What is it like to do that? Then let's keep that in mind. I think that's seeing things as they really are is the challenge.
What is real? Is my question to that.
Well, there you go. It's a very good question. But that's not really what that challenge says. It's to see things as they really are. Now, and you can say, okay, well, then that just says the same thing a different way. Well, the challenge is before us to peel away subjectivity in every moment.
Okay.
Okay. If we do that, then ultimately we arrive at an essential quality of that moment that is free from our interpretation. Now, that is a big challenge. It's one of the most difficult things that we can endeavor to do with our minds.
So let me see if I have the right idea with what you're saying. If I'm going to remove subjectivity, I look at something and question, okay, well, I want to look at this in its real, raw form. I can then ask myself, okay, what is this to me? But then I can kind of take it a step further. Okay, what is this to this other person? Okay, what is this to this group of people? What is this to the world? What is this to the universe? Is that maybe going along the lines of what you're saying?
Yes. And it may be traveling the wrong direction on the railroad track.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and let me see what you think about this possibility.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not saying this is correct and what you just said isn't more correct.
Sure.
But let's consider this too. If we are talking about... if we're talking about mindfulness, say we're existing in the present moment, we're seeing things as they really are. What does that mean? That means that imagine yourself sitting on the side, on the bank of a river.
Right.
And you're watching these things float down the river, right? And these are your thoughts your feelings, your emotions, your theories, all your ideas, they're floating down the river. Now, what do? We immediately, we run out there and jump onto one of them and we identify with it and it becomes us. We say, this is us.
Yes.
Right? This this idea is us. This thing is me, right? When in fact, in a way, and this is in this theoretical, this is pure theory, okay? But in fact, we are sitting there observing the river. Those thoughts, feelings, emotions, those are just things that our mind brings about. Okay, we are, in my view, and this is going to be, this is a quantum leap forward into the woo-wee-oo zone here, guys.
I know.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah, that's right. I live at 1925 woo-wee-oo Avenue. Yeah. But when we are essentially the observer of our life.
Right.
We are the observer. Now, if we identify with that, then it's like a black hole in the middle of us. Nothing, you can't think about it and have that thought not be something that's in the river. You can't have an emotion about it and have that emotion not be something that's in the river, right? It is an essential self. So the closer, coming in a very big circle back to the original question about, well, what is real? If we're talking about the closer we get to that essential self, the non-subjective participation in our life, and which almost sounds like an impossibility, I think we're getting closer to the answer.
Is it something along the lines of, instead of life is happening to me, life is happening through me? Is that kind of going along the lines of what you're saying?
I think so. I think so. I'm thinking on that. That's
when I listen to that and what you just asked, it reminds me of, okay, then what, if we want to know what is real or anything like that, then maybe we start with the mosaic negative. What is it not? What are things not? When we aren't doing these things, when we aren't being real, when we aren't living subjectively or non-subjectively in the moment, what are we not doing then? For me, a lot of it is, okay, there's one way to have life. Can you repeat what you said a second ago?
Life is happening to me as opposed to life is happening through me.
And to me, I think of, what is it not supposed to be? What are we doing wrong maybe in our daily lives? We're letting life happen at me.
Okay.
And I feel like that's a, don't do that.
Don't let it happen at you.
let life happen at you is the opposite of mindfulness.
I agree with that. This is a story that I told recently, and it's not an accident that this, if anyone, and probably now, by now, everyone has seen the movie at least five times, so many years, but Forrest Gump.
Yes. Great movie.
The first image that we have in that movie is not of Forrest Gump sitting on the bench waiting for the bus. That's the first time we see the Tom Hanks character. But the first image that we see is what? We see the feather floating through the air, that white feather floating on the winds of chance, of whatever happens. And that, the way I view that scene is that the film is saying, okay, well, this is a life lived by being carried along on the winds of chance. And that feather comes to light finally in Forrest Gump's book that he's got right there. He closes the book cover on the feather and he essentially tells the viewer, okay, this is my story. So the reason I think, and this is the payoff in this entire story here, the reason I think that we identify so much with the Forrest Gump character and we feel such identification with him so strongly is that we see ourselves in that.
Okay.
We see the fact that we tend to do that, I think.
So what kind of things, Brad, are you doing for yourself that helps you become more aware of this kind of stuff?
Well, I'm here.
Sure.
I was sitting staring out the back door until you guys called. So the meditating is a good, very good.
Walk us through your meditation ritual if you have one.
Okay. Well, there's active and inactive, right?
Okay.
Meditation or
something we've talked
about. No, I'm sorry. I used the wrong two words. It's not active. Sorry. Wrong two words. Formal and informal is what I should have said. Formal is what we normally think of when we think of meditating, okay? You've got nice folks who really think it's going to be cool and great, and there's nothing wrong with thinking that it's going to be cool and great. They want to, you know, shave their head and sit cross-legged and have a Himalayan singing bowl. And
I know
that song. You just can't get it out of your head once you start singing it. You know, that's the trouble with it. It's like Baby Shark.
When I do that, it has nothing to do with meditation.
The ohms?
No, shaving my head, crossing my legs, and homing as long as I can.
What does it have to do with?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Guy probably does. Well, anyways, go on.
If Joe didn't want to know, I'm going to assure you I sure don't want to know either, Greg. Okay, another friend coupon bites the dust. Okay, that's all right.
How many does he have?
He's got a booklet, man. I mean, he's got
to see how many we can burn through today.
Entertainment books from like the 90s and 1000s that mothers would buy.
$7.99 off of a 3-year subscription to the movies. It's like, wait a minute, is that even savings? I don't know.
But I got a coupon.
I got a coupon with it. Oh, man.
So formal, informal.
Formal and informal meditation. So we think about formal, you know, and that's where you have your space in your house and you may have a little, you know, a candle there or whatever. And, okay. And that's very important. Informal is based generally on formal meditation, but it really means to draw your mind into the present moment in whatever you're doing.
Right.
And that is an extremely difficult thing to do because our tendency mentally is to get out ahead of ourselves, even if it's only by a second or two, right? We're sitting right here right now, and instead of thinking about what I'm saying, perhaps I'm thinking what I'm going to say in 2 or 3 sure. seconds from now. Uh-huh. Maybe that's a necessity of this production. You know, you don't want to say, oh, well, I forgot what we were talking about kind of thing.
It's almost a necessity of our own physical construct. It's like this idea is a little out there, but, you know, when we see things, we're
Did
never
Did you just
seeing...
say ooh-you again?
Ooh-you.
Okay, here
well,
we go.
This is more scientific ooh-you, though. Okay. But it's like, so I'm looking at you right now, right? And in the present moment, I am looking at you, but technically I'm looking at a past version of Brad because it takes a little bit of time for the light to get to my eye and my brain to process it. Now it's milliseconds, microseconds that we can't even fathom, but... That being said, it's hard to be completely 100% within the present moment.
Yeah.
Whereas with meditation, I think it becomes more possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me of a joke. You're talking about how long it takes the image to get back. It's 186,000 miles per second. It's not just a good idea. It's the law, you know? So, yeah, speed of light joke. Oh, gosh, I never get tired of those.
Back to the formal, informal. I think we did talk about this a little bit on the first episode, except the terms I've used to describe what you're describing is static and dynamic. Static being that formal kind of, you know, in your own place, kind of seclusion, relaxing kind of meditation, whereas I think of dynamic as maybe you're doing a workout, a walk, something that you need to focus on in order to be within that present moment.
Yeah. It, another way to look at that, I agree with that, and let's consider it through an additional light. The idea of practicing a piece on the piano and of playing the piece in a concert. When you are formally practicing, you're practicing.
Right.
When you are informally practicing out in the world, you're playing.
That's true. That's a good point.
Because it brings the skills that you have developed through formal practice to bear on the actual living in the day-to-day, moment-to-moment life. So, yeah.
I love hearing about that. When I was flying to St. Louis last month, I was reading The Storytelling Animal. And as a part of that book, it's really focused on, okay, why are we as humans storytellers? We're the only animal on Earth that relies on stories in some way. Like, pigeons don't talk to each other. Say, hey, I got a good story.
As far
today.
As we know.
That was, you beat me to it.
So a part of what, and there's a couple of things I could weave in here, because at first I thought of Free Will. It's another book in which no matter how much you're trying to enact your idea of free will, the brain has decided what it's going to do seconds before you have formally decided what you're going to do. Sometimes it's actionary and reactionary, in which, okay, fight or flight, I'm going to react in a certain way. It makes slightly more sense to the, you know, unlearned person in that regard that, okay, my brain is executing a reflex, very survival action of, I'm going to dodge this train before it fucks me up. And then from there, there's more of a, okay, if I'm here speaking with you, if I'm thinking things and you're asking me something and it's a yes or no, even though I think I have the choice to say yes or no, really seconds ago, my brain has made that choice. And they've discovered a lot of this in scientific studies of like MRIs and the like, where we're imaging the brain, fMRI, I believe is what it was, imaging the brain and having people make decisions per card, per instance, and the brain actually flaring up on the imagery corresponded to what that decision was going to be seconds before that person said it out loud.
So let's flare up your brain a little, Greg. What is mental health to you?
Consistency and actively trying to be aware of the now. Among many things.
I like that. What are you trying to do to find that consistency within your life?
Good. Bring us full circle back to the meditation. Perfect. So, formally, and I actually got the app from Brad, it was Meditation Studio.
Ah,
in which
yes.
I'm trying to enact that more frequently in my life because I used to be more of a, I don't need formal meditation. I'll choose a more informal, dynamic meditation. And what I do, technically out of practice, what I do during my current day, situations coming and going, I will try to be here and the now. But we'll put that aside for a second. Now, and trying to formally meditate, and again, everyone, if you haven't checked it out, check out Meditation Studio. It's a great way to, okay, now I'm pulling myself out of myself in that more formal way where in order to focus, I have to figure out how to unfocus.
Right.
If that makes sense. And that's something I've never been good at. I always thought, oh, I just will keep focusing and focusing and focusing until I'll get somewhere. And
yes.
So I did Meditation Studio and I did it with a bath bomb. So they're actually bath salts, but not the Florida kind. Like the actual...
That's a relief.
Put these salts in my tub.
Uh-huh.
Had Meditation Studio lead me through a session.
Uh-huh.
It was a 16-minute focus on like mindset and breathing.
Yeah.
In which the idea is to unfocus to get somewhere with this meditation.
And I like that. That's well, what was the name of this app or this...
Meditation Studio.
Meditation Studio. Is it free?
It is free. I think there's some more, like you can subscribe to get more courses.
Uh-huh. That's right.
If you're just jumping in, like it's a good place to start.
Do you feel like it's something that you can use for, like if someone's getting into meditation for the first time in their life, something they can use to practice and then kind of, you know, let go of the app and be able to do it themselves afterwards?
Absolutely it is.
Okay, good.
Absolutely it is. I'm sorry, I was deferring to you, but unequivocally it is. It has a pretty wide front porch on the free access category, and then a lot to offer behind the pay curtain.
Very nice, because I know me personally, I love apps like that for getting started, but I hate relying on an app to be able to do that. You know, what if my phone dies? You know, then I can't meditate.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me. That feels like it defeats the purpose almost.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another thing that I would like to point out about meditating, about being in the present moment, like we're talking about. And I think it has it probably begins the process of bringing us in for a landing on the question of mental health. And that is that we are programmed, certainly in the Western world, to revolve our lives around doing. We have here, particularly in this country, the idea of rugged individualism, you know, the rugged individualist, all of this kind of stuff, you know, and he's a do guy, you know, he's doing. Even if all he's doing is sitting by the campfire while his horse stands there and he's, you know, smoking a Marlboro, he is still doing, right? As opposed to being. Now, getting back to the Eastern ideas again, and this isn't a comparison or any kind of a competition, but they do, some of the Eastern religions will focus more on the idea of being rather than doing. The truth is, and the Cliff's Notes of this entire thing here, is that we live in a world of doing, but we exist in a world of being. And there's a big difference between those two. And the idea of bringing our living into the world of being is the challenge. That's what we're talking about.
I love it. It's, that's I'm glad to hear that said out loud, especially because I've been thinking about it a lot recently. And again, it's for me a way of having the river of things that are passing by pass by me. And the idea of, and again, this is from a U2 song, Landlady. Not to give Bono any of the credit that of what Brad has just shared here. So everyone's cringing.
I get everything that I say out loud from Bono.
The lyric is, don't do, just be. And for me, in regard to the stream that we have used as imagery here and as something to compare what this is all about too, for me, it's very much of, well, sometimes trying to pay too much attention to the stream is in itself doing and not being.
Absolutely. Right. And that's
go ahead.
Okay. That's what I was talking about a moment ago, I think, or what I was trying to talk about, I think, was when we begin to have thoughts about that, about ourself as observer of our life, you know, of the essential self, right? As soon as we have a thought about it, we're doing. We're no longer being. Mm-hmm. That's the reason that I like to think of it as a black hole, really, in the middle of our existence. It sounds awfully negative, but that's not what I mean by it at all. It just means that it's immutable. It's unchangeable. You can't touch it. You know.
I love it. It going to quantum physics and anything like that. The closer you try to look at an electron, the more imperceivable it becomes.
Right. It's never in one spot.
Exactly. Get closer and closer and closer, and it just becomes more incomprehensible.
I had a cousin like that.
Oh, yeah?
Never in one spot and totally incomprehensible.
So, talking about mental health, well, if I think about, you know, be rather than do, and I think about maybe the opposite of mental health, where it'd be, you know, mental dysfunction or distress or depression, anxiety, that kind of thing. I think about the middle-aged guy, family of five or six, needs to put food on the table, needs to pay that electric bill, needs to keep everything in order, right? Goes to a job that he hates, has to do the job because his family's not going to eat if he doesn't do that job. What would you say to someone like that who is caught in this system where they literally have to do just to survive and being is the last thing on their mind?
I'll tell you what, that's like being pitched a slow ball in the World Series, what you just did for me. Thank you. I appreciate that. I tell you, that person, and that's a broad category that you just named, of course,
absolutely.
And that's the reason that it's worth mentioning. I would say to those nice people that you have the most hope of any category out there. Years ago, when I first had to begin the process of writing performance evaluations, I had to figure out a way to tell somebody, whoever it was that I was evaluating, that you really kind of stink at this part of your job. But I had to say it in a way that didn't say you really kind of stink at this part of your job. Right? Yeah. And I came up with this, and I love it, and I think you're going to like it too. Feel free to use it. And that is, we have identified exciting areas for improvement.
Hey, I'd actually really
right? You should use that early and often. But as for that category of folks, we have really, truly identified an exciting, you know, broad and deep category for improvement in their life. How are they going to improve? All it's going to take. Now, this isn't oversimplified. Or to try to insult them by minimizing these very real concerns, but by being there, participating in the moment-to-moment living of life, and not seeing it as a foregone conclusion, like you were saying earlier, you wake up in the morning and you say, "I'm low life. I'm a piece of crap." You're going. That is a self-fulfilling prophecy waiting to happen, right? So if they turn the internal narrative into, I don't want to say, you know, just arbitrary positivism. But if they begin to live their lives by actively participating in the present moments, meditating is a good way to get into it. Everybody can benefit from meditating. I'd say do that first.
I think so many people are just so unaware of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think that's more than a perfect answer. I was going to say you should fake his death.
Oh my God.
With that,
there's a company that'll do that for you, by the way.
Oh, you're giving me ideas.
Yeah, yeah. three easy monthly payments. Paid in advance, of course.
It always costs something.
I like that. So with that, let's go ahead and take a break to have a word from our sponsor, and then we can dive more into informal meditation and how we're doing that in our daily lives to better our mental health and the stability that comes with being mindfully aware and all that. Ooh, I like the way my voice sounds.
Now, we've all had that feeling after taking care of ourselves for an extended period of time. We worked out, we went ahead and read that book. Now it's time to take care of yourself, and guess what? Cunnilingus will do the trick. Cunnilingus is just one of those, oh, you come on down, get that cunnilingus, and you won't regret it one bit, won't worry about nothing in the world, nothing will even matter except Cunnilingus.
Come into Colonel Ingus's Fried Chicken Hut for our 8 pieces for $4.99 special. Mention the Colonel and get a 3-piece biscuit box free of charge.
Cunnilingus, huh, come on down, have some, and you know you'll come back for more.
Welcome back to the Wild Bunch. We have a very, very exciting episode and conversation going on right now about mental health. I am your host, Joe Hernandez, along with my co-host,
Gregory Valdez,
and our special guest,
Brad Drew of the 200 Project. Hi, everybody.
So where were we?
Well, we had just spent a lot of time explaining not only what is formal meditation, but starting at what is formal meditation, and setting that up to have us talk about now more of that informal meditation, something that you and I have spoken about at times as dynamic meditation.
Right.
And not to say that they're the same thing, but for all those listening and having not dived into meditation as a way to focus on their own mental health, I think we know that you can go ahead and start, you know, using something like a meditation app or teaching yourself about meditation and actually meditating formally to have that achieve success in your goals with mental health. But I know people are going to want to know, well, what can I actively rotate stability?
Absolutely.
I meditate and focus on that stability.
Absolutely. I think me and myself, at least personally speaking, I find it very easy to be calm. Right. You know, it's kind of easy for me to do that more formal like meditation of relaxing, getting my mind off of things. But I feel a lot of times what I need more to keep my own personal mental health is letting out energy, releasing energy, not necessarily harboring it and manifesting it, but kind of exploding with it.
You ever get angry?
Yeah. I mean, like just out of nowhere, out of the blue, oh, I wake up mad kind of thing. Or something happens, someone cuts me off. I'm like, oh, this douchebag just cut me off.
Both.
That was you. I'm sorry about that.
more so the second one than the first one. I'm not generally the type of person that's going to wake up angry unless there's reason. If someone upsets me or wrongs me, sure, I'll get angry just like the other person. But what I'm talking about isn't necessarily an anger, but more of like a, not an anxiousness, kind of an anxiousness, ansias for my Hispanic listeners out there, you know what I mean? It's like this built up tension that you just want to just let go, to release. Yeah, yeah. It's really hard to explain. Okay, a good way to explain it is I read this, God, I can't even remember where I read it. It was so long ago, but it was a topic that really kind of stuck with me. And it was this guy talking about why people are depressed in our day and age. And he compared it to, you know, back in the day, cavemen, right? Cavemen, people, you know, back when technology didn't exist, went through a lot of stress, right? You're going, minding your own business, trying to pick some berries and nuts, and all of a sudden you got this tiger thing chasing you. that's stressful. You know what I mean? You're going to be very, very, very stressed out if that happens.
I believe the parlance of their time is saber-toothed tiger.
Sure, one of those. It's a tiger thing, whatever.
I'm sorry, I didn't pause to look at its teeth, Greg.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been. Could have been a coyote. I'm going to eat me.
Might have been a very aggressive raccoon, but I'm running, whatever it was.
Well, that being said, this guy was talking about that human beings now don't go through that type of stress. They go through different types of stress. They're going to go to an office. This isn't everyone, of course, but just generally speaking, they're going to go to an office and they're going to sit down and punch numbers in hours at a time. And then they're going to go home and they're going to sit down and they're going to watch TV. And their stress is all mental, where they're, as opposed to a physical stress. And it causes these imbalances with our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So sympathetic, fight or flight, energy release, parasympathetic, rest and digest, kind of chilling back at home. You know what I mean? Digesting everything. And because of that imbalance, he believed that is a big reason why we're depressed. We're not exerting ourselves, getting that sympathetic drive the way we used to. You know, it's like a lion at a zoo, right? That's just cooped up all day, not doing anything. Well, they're going to want to go and run and hunt. It's just in their DNA.
Not only that, but that's a form of complacency.
Absolutely. And what is the thing about the wild bunch in complacency, Greg?
We don't do it. Fuck it.
No, don't be complacent. That's not enough. Warriors against complacency.
I want to chime in with Brad here, but I asked that question originally, if you get angry, because for me and ever since episode one, self-identity and self-branding, identity and self-branding, it's this idea of, personally, Gregory Valdez wants to keep a positive outlook, wants to say, fuck toxicity, remove all negativity. But along the way, I've realized and learned that you have to have those moments of frustration and, I wouldn't say giving in to negativity, but sometimes anger, to go ahead and formulate this whole of yourself that can be further consistent with positivity, mental health, and having that outlook of, okay, this is me in the here and now, or as close as I can get to it. One of the things I love about the 200 Project is identifying the mediators and proxies in our lives that, to me, add to the depression that Joe is talking about right here.
Yes. Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, we definitely have, we tend to insulate ourselves from these stressors like you're describing. You know, we don't want to really come into close contact with the saber-toothed tiger that's closing in on us, you know, either literally or figuratively. We just don't want to do that. So we, out of really self-preservation, we set up these moderators, these little mediators here that are in between us and the actual moment of living our lives. But we're a little too good at the job. We make them a little too efficient. And so what we do is we say, well, if a little's good, then a lot's got to be better. And we completely and totally, in a lot of cases, and a lot of folks suffer because of this, remove ourselves from the experiencing of living. You know, one of the things that opens a broader category, if you don't mind, I'd like to throw in. The 200 Project is also very involved in the hard questions that we are faced with and that we want to avoid. Called by another name, the saber-toothed tigers. We're into saber-toothed tigers. What are these questions that cause us this kind of this low-level anxiety like you were referring to?
Kind of going back to what you said earlier about being uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, when we talk about things like, let's just use the D word once, okay? Let's just talk about this. Let's just say death.
Oh, I was like, which D word is
that? No, that's the reason that I am so funny. I just think it's funny as hell that Dallas insists on being called Big D. It's like, no, buddy, the Big D is death. You know, you might be one of the other D's, but Big D, that's what that's for. But we, especially, and here we are again, in this country where we live our lives, we are, in the West broadly, we're addicted to images of youth. We see young in the advertising. We see, you know, all of the television, all of the film that's out there, largely focused on youth. Right. So we are intoxicated with this image, this incessant flow of youth. it creates, like you were talking about, a dissonance between expectation and reality. And that dissonance, that lack of alignment, in my view, is a hugely stressful factor in our lives.
But it's that wrong kind of stress.
Oh, absolutely.
It's that stress that's going to bring us down as opposed to
absolutely
build
right.
us up, make us stronger.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. That's it. And so that's the reason, I think, and we were talking about the idea of having the mediators that we create, because we're withdrawing from the difficulty, from that stress. You know, you look at... I told you they were hard questions. Let's talk about the obesity epidemic, gang. You know, I mean, the standard American diet, the Western diet, however we want to refer to it, is creating an entire generation of people that are, less healthy than their parents at the same age. Okay.
Right.
And it's the diet that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why do we continue to consume that diet? Because it's easier to do it, to consume it, than it is to face the hard question. It's easier to allow ourselves to be intoxicated by these images of youth than it is to contemplate the idea that one day we will in fact shuffle off this mortal coil and die. You know, I mean, this we have these hard questions as part of our existence. It comes with the package. You know, why is rare wine valued? It's rare. It's valued because it's rare.
Right.
We should appreciate our life because it is limited. To deny the limitation denies us the beauty of valuing our life, the full richness of seeing the depth and wonder of our life, you know, our individual life.
I love that you mentioned obesity and the standard American diet. I also love that the standard American diet, you do the little acronym, it's SAD.
It is.
But, you know, speaking for myself, I know Greg can probably appreciate this as well. I mean, I used to be very overweight, 210 pounds. Greg, what were you at your heaviest?
280.
Tell me, now what do you weigh?
175.
How do you feel mentally now compared to when you were 280 pounds?
Oh, glorious.
Yeah, right. Totally different. And it's just amazing how just something like that weight and what you're eating and putting in your body, how it can affect your mental health.
Right. Being scared of death is one of these things that most people want to hold on to in a lot of ways. Along my journey, along to getting here and now, whether it's the weight loss, the mental health actions I've taken to make sure there's stability and consistency there, and right, living in the now, a lot of it has been in exercise. That's a big part of it. Even, again, being scared of death, it's like, I'm not scared of death as much as I'm scared of everything that'll happen before death.
I'm scared of living a crappy life.
Exactly. So whenever I'd go run, whenever I'd go out and exercise, it was one thing for it to be exercise, something good for my overall well-being and health. Along the way, I was making sure that it was also feeding into that sort of dynamic take on what can I do to better my mental state, my awareness in the here and now. A lot of it was using anger and frustration at times to fuel that excess anxiety, turn it into bursts of energy for me to run. Or I'd be running down Dezavala in San Antonio, growling, just going all Wolverine, like burying my claws and running through the forest. I'll never forget this one time I actually was doing it and what I thought was a quiet, like street. And I'm coming out of the run still like, and there's a gentleman standing under a tree in the shade, staring at me, scared, cell phone in hand.
He'll never be the same.
I was never the same. I was like, whoa. Not only using that energy and those feelings and those anxieties to fuel that state of dynamic meditation of sorts, but also then slowing down and using the remainder of that time being out in nature and right outside, even with cars driving by, passersby, random people on the street, homeless people, people honking, flipping each other off, seeing the Walmart and the Starbucks and all of this that goes into the everyday things that people want and expect out of living. For me, it was more about just trying to take everything in a way where hopefully I could appreciate everything for what it was literally run my fingers through grass and trees and not worry about how much time I was spending out there, because all people are worried about out there is getting from point A to point B as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that time was also about slowing down and watching all the people be so frantic as a way to remind myself that that's not the way to live. That's not being present in the here and now. That is doing, not being. That's my take on the whole exercise and dynamic meditation and using a lot of different sources to fuel my growth in that regard.
You ever find yourself angry, Brad?
I grew up around anger, Joe. Okay. Yeah, I did. In fact, I struggled with it for a lot of years.
Okay.
In my early life. I wasn't unreasonable until I was.
Okay.
And then I was, you know. So, yeah, I've struggled with anger in the past. There's one thing that I'm glad you asked that question, because let me pivot from what you were talking about and using your example, Joe. I conducted an interview here not long ago with a woman named Mickey Fine, who has a website that I would encourage your listeners to check out. It's livingmindfully.org. Mickey teaches, Joe, you and I were talking about this before we started recording. She's the only person in the city of Houston, believe that or not, who is qualified to teach a course called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. And one of the mantras in there, well, not literally a mantra, as poor choice of words because she doesn't use mantras in there, but one of the key phrases in that teaching is non-judgmental awareness. Non-judgmental awareness. So if we create spacious, I forgot to throw in spacious in there, if we create spacious non-judgmental awareness around a moment, around a thing, around an experience, then that's saying a lot. Because if we are, let's examine that term one bit at a time. It's spacious in that it has enough room to be what it is, right? To see, we're going to give ourselves enough room to see this thing, whatever it is, as it really is. Non-judgmental, we make judgments all the time. We are a constant machine that gives meaning to things and judges things. It's a constant flow, it never stops. So that is a primary challenge when we want to be mindful, is to stop that, right? So we have spacious, non-judgmental, and then the last thing is awareness. So we have to bring the thing fully into the moment, to be there in that present moment with whatever this thing might be. In her case, the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, I was telling Joe, was begun like in 1979, and it was up at University of Massachusetts Medical School, and they were working with people who were suffering chronic pain from all different types of sources, right? So they were teaching them through meditation, through this creation of spacious, non-judgmental awareness, say that 10 times, that they could actually be with that moment of pain, breathe with it, and by doing that, they essentially defanged it, you know, and that applies to anything and everything. I went through, and I'm going to conclude this bit of the story, sorry for the long-winded bit here, but I went through Mickey Fine's program, 8-week program, in the fall last year, and I found, getting back to the question of anger, that with that tool, creating spacious, non-judgmental awareness around the moment of anger, right, just to see it, be there with it, and to not live it, to realize myself as the observer of my life, and that the anger was just another thing. Like,
right.
I'm thinking, oh, well, the sky's blue. Okay, well, that's a thought. There it goes. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, this guy just, you know, cut me off on the freeway. I'm going to, you know, I think I'll rage for a moment. You know,
right.
No, thank you. I think I won't. You know, it gives us the chance, by creating that space, it gives us a chance to respond rather than to react.
Right.
End of story.
And that's something anyone can really practice within their own life. And it doesn't necessarily have to be anger. It can be sadness.
It can be
anything.
Something
happened to me. Maybe I failed at something. Maybe I missed out on something. Maybe someone left me. I'm sad. I feel sad. I'm not going to judge myself for feeling sad. And I guess realizing that that sadness, that anger, whatever it may be, it's never permanent. It's only as permanent as much as how we make it permanent.
I think people like to hold on to that. They don't even realize that they impede their growth by holding that as long as they can.
Right.
I think some people would argue, well, I hold on to that as a source of power.
Uh-huh.
I hold on to it to fuel me. I hold on to it to give me the sense of control in order to keep going and to be strong.
I think my most recent encounter of this, I had to take a test for school a few weeks ago. And the score I got was not the score that I intended to get. It's not what I wanted. And man, I was angry. I was absolutely angry. I was angry with myself. I was disappointed with myself. And the hardest part actually was going home, you know, telling my parents, telling my family, you know, what had happened. And they weren't mad, of course. They're not going to be mad at me. I tried my best, that kind of thing. But what was hard was it'll be okay. You know, it'll be fine. You'll get it next time. You'll do this. And all I wanted at the moment was to be alone with what I felt. And it wasn't that, you know, oh, screw you guys, get away from me, I'm mad at you. No, had nothing to do with them, had nothing to do with anything. All I wanted to do was lay down, feel that sadness, feel that anger, but at the same time, it was like, you know, tomorrow's another day, it's not the end of the world, this isn't gonna kill me, it's not gonna destroy my life or prevent me from doing what I want or need to do. It's gonna go away, and it did. The next day, I felt better. Yeah, am I still disappointed at what happened? Of course, but you gotta let yourself feel what you feel and then let it go when it needs to go.
Yeah, that's a real big key in moving forward in any regard. Right now I'm sitting here thinking about judgment and this phrase of spacious, non-judgmental
awareness.
Awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you a funny thing about Mickey Fiennes. I think I just inhaled a butterfly over here as it came by. Sorry about the
better than a bee.
Well, yeah. I was just sitting here thinking that. Excuse me. But during that 8-week session with Mickey Fiennes' organization over there, the most common way that we had to practice that, creating that spacious, non-judgmental awareness, was as we were meditating. And for anybody who's ever meditated for any length of time at all, you will notice that you completely unbidden, but it was uniform across all the people in the class, your face started to itch because you're sitting and you're sitting still. I know. Now everybody in the studio is scratching face. Yeah, and I know. Me too. It's like, yeah, but it's like you were, and it didn't just kind of subtly itch either. It was like you were shot with an itch dart.
Oh,
you know, like, this guy. You know, and the idea is you're being mindful. So what we're going to do is we're going to create spacious, non-judgmental awareness around the idea that this itch is manifest now on my face, and we're going to be with that itch rather than responding to it and reaching up and scratching it. And this is in the spirit, remember, experiencing severe chronic pain, right? This people who were experiencing severe chronic pain, right? This mindfulness-based stress reduction program originally. So here was, and here presented very ready opportunities for us to present with or to cope with a much more benign and easy to fix thing like an itchy face, right? But it's very useful, because when you're there with something as tangible as an itchy face, then you also understand, you come to understand that if you have this anger thing, or if you have this disappointment with a grade or whatever it might be, that if you give it the space, if you don't judge it, you're aware of it, and like you say, then you can let it go.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because you're observing it. It's like a cloud in the sky. It is not you. We are not our thoughts.
And as a part of that, I love the word judge. A lot of times I like to say, especially now, because with social media and where people are and how, right, we want to, this is a safe zone. Don't worry, it's a safe zone. Nothing you say can be attacked. And
if this is a safe zone, I yeah, an hour. If this is a safe zone, I should have left an hour ago.
Never with us. So the idea is, I don't judge. I hear that a lot too. Or don't judge me. And I dislike that, because for me, when I hear about this form of meditation, it's, and for what I personally believe in and like to practice, is that I am always judging. I'm always judging. It's what I do with a judgment that matters.
We're all always judging.
It's absolutely. Like,
I judge the itch. It's what I do with that judgment of the itch that is the outcome and something that I'm really working with here. Now we got something tangible in which I haven't ignored the itch, but I'm going to be with the itch and learn to walk alongside it in a certain regard. I think that if people were to try to let themselves have judgment and then move accordingly with that judgment in a way that doesn't ostracize the person you're judging or the action, again, you create the room for understanding around the judgment. Like a person-to-person way to practice this form of meditation, like on the fly. Sometimes, and dealing with anger and dealing with sadness, because going back to obesity, an easy way to deal with sadness at times is eating.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's all these different examples of how we react to certain situations that at the end of the day take away from our mindfulness, truly not giving us the mental health we deserve.
Right.
That we're actually meant to have.
And by the way, if you don't mind me saying here, this isn't really a disclaimer, because you're in charge of your own disclaimers, but I want to extend a sincere message if any of your listeners are experiencing any kind of crisis in their thinking, if they feel like they are depressed or any of the things that they know better, you know, they will know better than any, far better than I sitting here would know. But there are resources. You are your mind is a precious resource. Mm-hmm. Your mind is unique. And is a precious resource, and it is unique. We need you. So look up a resource. There's plenty out there. And if you can't do it yourself, then enlist the help of someone that you care about to do that. Because your health is belongs to you. It's your birthright.
Thank you.
I would definitely stamp that disclaimer. I think that anyone, you know, even if you just have that little tinge of, maybe I should talk to someone. Yeah, absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
I love it. That's why we do what we're doing here today. Uh-huh. We've had many times where people come up to us saying, thank you for talking about that. That's why our tagline, headline, motto for the show is talking about the things that you've always wanted to, but we're always afraid of.
And you know, the thing is, everyone is in on this. Everyone at some point in their life, I don't care who they are, what their circumstances is, they've felt depressed, angry, upset, you know, just totally mentally out of it. Yes, some more than others, some spectrums different than others, but everyone has that burden on their back. Everyone is dealing with something, you know, and that's something to keep in mind when you're interacting with someone, when, you know, you get that waitress that may not be in the best of moods. We're all dealing with our own shit here.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's really interesting to me how I was struck by something that you were just saying, Joe, about how some more than others. I think it seems like people are we disguise our reactions, right? You would agree with that?
What do you mean by that?
Well, that some folks hide their responses to life's vicissitudes, you know. I mean, here comes a certain situation. Two people see it the exact same thing. One of them, you know, just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that jerk cut us off on the freeway. And right. The other one kind of says, ho hum, yawn, whatever. Uh-huh. Well, it makes me wonder how uniform the human experience actually is. When we cut back away, step back and back and back and back, and we get back to that essential self, it makes me wonder how uniform that that essential self is from one person to the next.
I love to believe that it is very uniform.
I tend to think so.
I do as well. I love to believe that it's very uniform, but I think as my own self-disclaimer, I can never know what you're experiencing. I can never know what Greg's experiencing. I can never know what anyone's experiencing. And just out of respect for give them that, hey, you know what I mean? You know, I like to give them that, hey, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's extremely difficult. It might be what I'm going through. I'm sure it's extremely difficult. It might, couldn't handle. If I were in your shoes, I couldn't handle, you know? And I like that whole thing of you're given what you can handle, so to speak. But yes, I do agree with you, Brad. I do believe that there is a lot of uniformity with that, all that stuff that we're going through.
Yeah, at its core.
Yeah, sorry, Greg.
Oh, I was just going to, at its core, I tend to err towards the idea of things not being as uniform across each other as we might believe, because of exactly what Joe said, experiences, but human interaction and human reaction is extremely uniform. One of the things I've heard from somebody who's passed away quite a bit ago, and I only found out over Christmas break, it's Pat Roundtree. She was the meanest son of a bitch, runt with a capital C, Holy Ghost head of admin in that place. She was like the head of admin in the church office.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen her just be crude and cruel and mean to people, and things that just can't get. And one day I'm sitting there in the office visiting with her, and she says, talking about her son who had passed away, I think he had committed suicide even, was she'd hear a lot of, and as an, I'm so sorry for your loss. And as an addendum to that at times, I know exactly what you're going through. I know how you feel. And in saying that, she looked at me and said, Nobody knows how I feel, and nobody ever will. A lot of that comes from her own stubbornness, I'd always imagined, but it was something that stuck with me ever since.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what I'm going through, and nobody knows how I feel. You can only perceive a certain awareness of what you think is happening in my experience. That's not to be a devil's advocate or to exclude anything that was just said. It's just another thing to keep in mind.
Well, and if you don't mind me saying, I think that's where compassion comes in, you know, because compassion and empathy are within our control. And that is, I believe, how we can bridge that gap where we feel we can sense the distance between ourselves and our fellow human beings. And we bridge it with a conscious act of goodwill and good faith. You know, so
absolutely. I think in just practicing that, you kind of benefit your own mental health as well.
Bingo. Well, with that said, that's all the time we have for today. Brad, want to go ahead and tell us more about where we can find you, where we can reach you?
Absolutely. The 200 Project, lest you go on project. And that is The 200 Project, lest you go online and reach the wrong location. The200project.com is our URL. Go visit our website. We have podcasts, seeking guests there that are seeking to one day rival the high quality of this one. We may not get there, but it's to be shot for. So we are a resource for you, and that's it. Greg, I really appreciate your invitation. Joe, awfully good to see you. You guys,
it was great having you on the show. Thank you so much, Brad.
And a special thank you again to Brad, but also for inviting us to Barron Studios, where we are recording from today. Here in lovely Houston, Texas, near the Heights.
Great space, by the way.
Yes, this is awesome. And, you know, Joe and I are probably going to look into figuring out how to record from here ourselves. So stay tuned for more news on that. You'll know as soon as we do, pretty much.
Thank you, listeners. Be well.
Yes, this is The Wild Bunch signing off.